Take a trip back in time to a world when you had to fine-tune a radio station. A repairman came to your home to fix a broken TV set. And listening to an album required flipping to side B. This is the way electronics used to be. Welcome to Vintage Volt.
Hello, and welcome to the premiere edition of Vintage Volt's podcast. For several years, I've been thinking of doing a podcast on old electronic stuff. Stuff that started to become popular in the 70s and 80s before electronic gadgets and games and stuff like that started becoming very ubiquitous and, you know, a natural part of modern life. First of all, my name is Jeff Salzman, and I'm a self-proclaimed geek. I've always liked playing with electronic games, toys, whatnot. I was the person who used to go into a Radio Shack all the time and basically stay there until the store manager would get upset and kick me out. Now, the only reason why I would go into a Radio Shack is because I ran out of money at the arcade, you know, a few doors down the hall. Anyhow, the premise of the show is, as I covered a little earlier, is I'm going to discuss a lot of the stuff that I grew up with. Toys. Well, some of the popular toys I grew up with were made by companies such as Milton Bradley and Ideal. And you may also remember some games like Simon, Merlin, handheld, the LED-based sports games made by Mattel, that kind of stuff. Or even if it's not even toys. There's also, you know, other electronic items. How many of you remember record players? Yeah, my target demographic will probably be the people who still remember record players and flipping a disc halfway through. But it's great if some of the younger generation learns about it or is curious about, you know, what it was like back then, back in the day, as they say, when dealing with electronic items and, you know, going through 9-volt batteries and D batteries, you know, because the electronic stuff back then wasn't very efficient. Then again, batteries didn't seem to be as expensive as they are today. Most items also ran off of the old carbon batteries, which were super cheap. But anyway, I'm going off on a tangent here. Well, more than likely discuss almost any of those items in future podcasts. This is basically an introduction. And if you hear some noise in the background, there's a reason for that. In the year or so that I've contemplated doing a podcast, I've considered setting up some fancy recording equipment, you know, setting myself up with a recording room, a booth, some soundproof area there at home that I can, create a super high-quality podcast. Meanwhile, I listen to podcasts, mainly retro podcasts, and stuff that is close to what had interested me in the past, like classic video gaming, home video gaming, classic computers, like the 8-bit stuff. And I realized that quality of the audio is not necessarily a required feature. Yes, it helps. In some cases, when I'm listening to something that has poor quality, as long as I can hear what's being said, and as long as the information is entertaining or, you know, piques my interest in some way, I'll continue to listen. I listen to a podcast because it's interesting. I think that's my primary goal here, is to make for an interesting podcast. So, in lieu of having a home studio recording system, I had to decide when I could find the best time to record anything. Usually that involves some, you know, alone time, family at home. Sometimes the kids have questions, and, you know, I got to do things around the house. Everybody's got their honey-do list, right? But the only free time that I can find to record a podcast as a single stream would be on my drive to or from work, which is about half hour or more. I may do more than one part and consider one podcast, so it may take several trips to and from work to get the podcast done. But most of my traveling is on the highway, so it's real easy for me to just pick the slow lane, cruise along a nice, easy, steady rate to minimize distraction, and, you know, talk into the open microphone on my my modern iPod Touch as if I'm talking to somebody sitting beside me. I'll definitely learn some lessons from, you know, about recording podcasts in a moving vehicle when I, you know, stop and actually play back what I'm saying right now. Something I'm not quite looking forward to. I never did like my voice, but I'll get around it. Anyway, as I mentioned before, classic retro electronics. Some of you already know what I'm talking about. You know, you're the people who, bought a LED digital watch because it was the coolest thing on the market in the 70s. It, you know, made you feel sophisticated, or, you know, maybe you had some money to burn at the time to spend a couple $100 for an LED watch. You were into gadgets, most likely. You couldn't wait for the next Radio Shack catalog to be mailed to you, not even having to go into the store to pick it up. And for that matter, you know, getting a Radio Shack catalog at all, since they don't have them anymore. You like the latest generation of, wood grain style cabinets for your stereo system, and, you know, the two bookshelf speakers for those who didn't have much room to put anything, or the very tall wood grain two-way, or maybe if you're lucky, three-way speakers for the home stereo, which, if you did it right, if you spent the money wisely and wanted quality, you had a component system. You bought the receiver, tuned in AM, FM, probably had two or three inputs for your 8-track player and phonograph, and, you know, for those who did spend the extra money, the cassette recorder or cassette deck. Your idea of a calculator, you know, use 9-volt batteries, not those little CR 2032 or 2016 pen-like batteries, the flat disc batteries that look like a quarter. And you may have gotten a few hours out of your calculator. You always remembered to turn it off in order to save the battery power. You didn't just leave it on because there was no such thing as auto-off on some of them. And yeah, just about the time slide rules started becoming less popular and companies like Texas Instrument came out with some low-cost, quality, trig-based calculators. I'm not going to let HP out on this one. I understand HP made some very good calculators starting in the 70s. They were a little bit out of people's reach, both financially and in ease of use. Could never get used to the reverse Polish notation myself. I own an HP 25. I have it somewhere in a box in my basement. But I don't play around with it too much. Personally, I'm a TI fan. But most of you may remember that. You may remember those kind of calculators. And, you know, or you remember when LCD calculators started becoming popular. You know, popular transition between something that was LED-based or to LCD-based is, for example, the Texas Instruments TI-30 calculator. Very popular scientific calculator. Came with nice instruction books, nice little case for it, and for the geeks, it fit through your belt. In that transition to a TI-30 with an LCD screen. That happened, what, in the early 80s and, you know, times like that. And that's where we started seeing devices run on smaller batteries and lasting longer because they didn't have to drive all those red LED segments. And, speaking of instructions, let me sidestep here a little bit. When you buy an electronics item today, where do you get it? Like, let's say you're buying a calculator or a watch for that matter. You can almost buy them at the checkout counter, hanging in a, you know, in a piece of plastic that's sealed, hermetically sealed. and it's hanging on the rack there, along with the bubble gum and the other candies and stuff like that. The other suggestive sell are sell up items, and you know those calculators today that you buy that way are probably more powerful than say the TI-30 has ever been in any of its variations. But one thing you did get with the TI-30 when it first came out is a very nice, high-quality guidebook that showed you how to use it, gave you step-by-step instructions. You actually learned a little bit about math just by reading the, I would say it was at least 100-plus pages in the book that it gave you. These days, with the calculators that you can buy, you may get a fold-out sheet that's been folded maybe 20 times, and then as soon as you find which end is up, you got this big map-like paper. For those of you who remember maps too, you got this large piece of paper you have to unfold, then you got to orient it so you can read the text, and then you got to find the English language, and about the only way you can learn how to do anything on that is if you look at the one limited sample calculation which demonstrates any particular key, but doesn't necessarily give you a background to what that key's function is. And personally, I feel nostalgic for the days when you spent money on an item and you got a nice book and or a nice case for it, and it came in a great box. You bought something, it has substance to it. You're carrying this big box home, and it's got all sorts of important information in it, stuff to keep you busy, make it feel like it's worthwhile spending your money on the item. Same thing goes for digital watches. You can buy Texas Instrument digital watches. You can buy Casio, Armatron, other companies made some nice digital and alarm chronographs back in the late 70s, early 80s. Very popular items sold at places like Sears, JCPenney. But those came with pretty nice instructions and a nice, attractive case. And for that matter, they were set on display at most of the stores at the time that would sell those items, like Best Products or Jewel Core, if you remember them. Even Sears and JCPenney gave them a nice little write-up in their catalogs. Especially their Christmas catalogs. You don't see too many of those anymore either. Now, what does that have to do with vintage Volts? Well, as a kid, I always looked forward to the Sears and JCPenney catalogs at Christmas time, especially the Sears Wish Book. Because I knew starting about two-thirds of the way through that catalog, I can open it up and I start seeing all the cool electronics gear and cassette recorders. You know, that was our personal media, portable media, is the AM/FM cassette recorders that you threw 4C batteries in or plugged it into the wall with the optional power supply. And turn a little further, I'll see the latest gadget in a digital watch, or I'll see the latest electronic toy because, when LEDs started becoming real cheap, toys just started popping up from almost nowhere. So you have toys like the aforementioned Mattel sports games, or another popular one I'll probably discuss in a future podcast, the Milton Bradley Microvision, one of the first handheld electronic games with a interchangeable cartridge. And there was also other games and toys like, electronic toys that you could program. How many remember the Big Trek? That was a toy that I wish I could get, but it was always too expensive for me, even at the price they sold it for back then. You know how it is. The value of a dollar changes, the cost of living increases, and what was officially $40 back then is equivalent to buying it for $200 now. So, it was kind of out of my reach to get one of those, or for that matter, to get one as a Christmas gift. But anyway, it all comes back to nostalgia and remembering how things were the stuff that we did as kids, you know, especially people my age. I'm in my 40s. And some of the fun we had exploring the newer technology before it became something that, well, it's no fun. A big deal. So they come out with a new electronic item these days. Nobody really gets that same feeling from a new electronic item the way they did back then. Right now, it's usually a new item from a particular vendor or manufacturer. And it's not necessarily what makes the item work. It's just the fact that it is an item. It just happens to be electronic. For example, well, with iPods. You know, iPods were groundbreaking. But before long, you know, it's just, okay, so Apple comes out with a new version of their iPod. No big deal. Something back then, it's electronic. People are not only surprised that, you know, there's a neat, cool electronic item, but the fact that the electronic item can do what it does, because most people didn't understand what an electronic item was. There's a certain amount of mystery to it, and it's the mystery that made it all fun back then. These days, people pretty much take for granted that anything can be done with electronics, and for the most part, they're correct. But we lost that mystery. And it's some of the mystery I like to uncover with these podcasts, just describing what that was, what it felt like. You know, was it good or bad? Did it seem useless? There's many ways of looking at it, and everybody who remembers the era probably has a different story to tell. And I'm sure there's many different stories, and this podcast will pretty much be, you know, my stories. And you may have heard some beeps in the background. That's my modern-day electronics tell me I have email. Yet something else people take for granted. Where back then, you know, just the simple act of being able to dial telephone correctly and, you know, not have a noisy line to make a connection to a BBS with your 8-bit home computer and your 300 baud modem 1200 if you can afford it. And start typing messages back and forth. And computers are another thing I'll be getting into. I have my fair share of playing with computers many years before I even owned one. I still kind of remember like it was yesterday. And I'd love to get my hands on a copy of that version of the Radio Shack catalog that introduced the TRS-80 Model 1 home computer. I think I remember even saying to my mom at the time, look, it's only $500, you know, like, you know, as a child, you know, $500 is just as easy to get as, you know, anything else in the world. It's as easy to get $500 as it is to easily find a penny on the street. I just didn't quite understand that $500 was, in most cases, probably a month or two of take-home pay for a single wage earner. So, but it was neat. I still got to go into the Radio Shack and play with the computers. That actually kept me out of trouble. And as I said before, you know, I used to go to the mall with my parents. I was old enough to go to the arcade, play the games there. Arcade stuff, it's even another subject I'll probably discuss in a future podcast. So I play at the arcade until I run out of money, and then I'll go to Radio Shack and look around, basically see the catalog come to life in the store. You know, play on the computers, play with the toys, crank up the stereos a little bit, go back to the back and look at all the spare electronic parts that, you know, somebody can use to build their own circuits. We're talking items that you can buy the exact same parts that were typically in some of the games at the time. They weren't specially designed. They weren't specially created microprocessors like they are today. Every single device has its own custom processor or own custom set of chips to perform its functions. You know, we're talking about back then parts that you bought off the shelf, and very similar versions of those off-the-shelf parts may be in the electronic items of the day. So, I'm also an electronics hobbyist. And I remember the day you could go into a Radio Shack or I see some other companies. I remember Lafayette Electronics and there's one that's still around that is mail order. That's DigiKey. They're still around and get some of the hard-to-find stuff. But yeah, you could go into a Radio Shack. You can actually buy books to learn how to make your own electronic circuits, you know, solder stuff together, understand what makes electronic items work, get some of the basic theories, and buy the parts all in the same store. And it was great to be able to design circuits and buy the stuff to etch my own circuit boards and drill all the holes and put the parts in and, you know, and see a circuit come to life because it's something that I've read out of a book and built from a set of plans or designed on my own. It's tough to do that these days with today's surface mount electronics. It's just very hard to hold the part in place, you know, the tiny little parts that they have now. And there's a steep learning curve for even trying to understand some of the more basic components, like, programmable microprocessors. Those who've dealt with microprocessors or computing in general may understand what it's all about. But for somebody to jump right into that idea of buying a chip, and instead of putting together a circuit with a bunch of standard integrated circuits that are comprised of logic gates, they would just write a program and, you know, hook it up to a cable to their computer these days and program an application which mimics a collection of logic circuits, puts everything basically on one chip instead of a handful of chips to get things done. As far as an electronics hobby is concerned, you know, that's changed drastically. So some of the stuff I will be talking about is how it was. And for those who are interested in getting into it, there are still resources out there to basically start from scratch. Go back to the days when that's how you design circuits to do something, you know, simple or, you know, somewhat moderate in complexity, and go on from there. Anyhow, I'm getting close to home, so I'm going to end the podcast here. Like I said, introductory podcast. I apologize if the quality is not anything that you may have expected. I promise I will get better in the future. I'm a little nervous at doing this, but I think I'm more nervous because I'm really just talking to nobody in front of me, and that's really the experience here. So I'm talking to everybody who wants to listen, but I'm talking to nobody at all right now. I just have to get used to it. I'll get a little more comfortable talking about things, and I'll certainly want to talk about any questions that you people may have. Feel free to come to the Vintage Volts website at www.vintagevolts.com, and you can send email to podcast@vintagevolts.com. I look forward to answering some of your questions. Meanwhile, the next episode I hope to start in about a week, maybe 2 weeks. I do want to pick a time that I can keep going at a regular basis. I don't want to have to do too many in too short of a time, and I don't want to drag it out, you know, far too long where both you and I will start losing interest in it. So anyway, look on the website in about, you know, a week or two, and you'll see the next podcast coming up. For now, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
This episode of Vintage Volts was recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike license. The theme music is called Galaxy Hopping by the artist M. Ambient.